Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 64.
This week on the podcast, welcome NSA listeners. If we'd have known you were coming, we would have baked a cake.
SCOTUS has the most confusing week ever, care of Antonin Scalia.
Susan Rice is now more powerful than the senators that tried to derail her.
Marco Rubio proves to be a fair-weather fan of his own immigration bill.
And Frank Lautenberg's absence spurs Chris Christie to do everything wrong he can think of in the run-up to his own re-election campaign.
It's our favorite time of year! The Bilderberg Convention, the Vegas week of corporate conspiracy creation, kicks off this week.
All this and more. Plus, don't forget to follow us on Twitter. This is Brain Trust Live. Well, welcome, listeners, podcast listeners. Welcome, United States government.
Because we're so happy to have you.
We're happy to add you to the list of... I hope they're actually doing a download.
I hope they're not
I would really...
streaming this in some way where we don't get counted, or doesn't get counted as an audience.
I know.
That would be rude.
I don't personally... If they're listening, that's fine. I just want it counted someplace.
Yeah, I want it to be added to the number of listeners that we have so that our subscriber number looks higher.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. We have to warn you before we get into, obviously, the NSA surveillance story. It's going to be our first story. But
right.
We want to wish you a happy Pride Month because that's going on. And because it's Pride Month, it is LA Pride right now. And we are doing the podcast... in the middle of...
some
pride noise, and it's too hot, so we have the windows open, and there's people milling about. My dog could potentially bark at people. She's been barking the entire weekend at people drunkenly walking through the streets.
There are a couple of parties within earshot that are playing house music
as
we speak.
That's what you would be doing.
Right, yeah. You're not going to play punk music at a pride party.
No.
But
we opted to do it at my house because Lila's been having a lot of crying baby problems.
Two sides... Yesterday, there was literally a moment where I was trying to take a nap because I had been both kept up late by a baby and woken up by a baby,
yeah.
And both babies started crying at once on either side of my apartment.
So there's never a safe time to sleep.
Right. I was like, this is it. This is the end of it. We've just proven that there's no time that you're safe from a baby. And I've come up with a lot of different ways to deal with this problem. I was thinking about maybe suggesting that we start trying all people under the age of 5 as adults in courts of law, because I thought we could put some of them behind bars. They're causing the majority of noise complaints in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you can't ticket someone for having a baby. You can ticket them if their dog is barking, but you can't, like, a baby is like, what do you do about that?
Right, and they're more obnoxious.
Yeah. Well, as I was explaining to Brent yesterday, women are, like, biologically incapable of sleeping through a baby crying,
right.
Because that's how babies get fed, is by their mothers feeding them because they can't sleep.
Right.
You know, that's like, part of how we're programmed to be, is people who can't sleep through baby crying.
Yeah.
So it's really the worst noise out there.
Yeah.
Much worse than the siren that's just circling the neighborhood.
The sirens, too.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be a lot of ambulances picking people up for alcohol poisoning.
Correct.
Since it's Pride Month. But anyway, so obviously the big story of the week this week was the NSA surveillance story that sort of like blew up midweek and then sort of through the end of the week as we continued to get sort of like revelations about it.
Right.
Wednesday, we found out in The Guardian, of all places. Why is The Guardian reporting this, by the way?
It's because, and The Guardian is also the paper that finally revealed the identity of the person who released all of this information. But The Guardian is where you go, I guess, to leak international news away, like that not in the U.S. press.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, it's the safest place probably to leak a story like this.
But basically what we found out in The Guardian was a story that someone had, that Verizon was basically like giving over phone records.
Metadata.
Metadata.
Whatever.
Exactly. Like they're not listening. They're just basically like seeing
like
phone,
who called
phone
who,
numbers
when,
and how long the
how
calls
long
were
the calls
for
were.
And things like that. So, and it came out as sort of the week went on that Verizon was not alone. There.
Right. That every major phone
others,
company
all
is
the phone
doing
companies,
it.
Which... would make sense.
Right. Verizon users are not inherently more suspicious than other users.
No, they're not.
If anyone's suspicious, it's AT&T users, and I can confirm that because I'm an AT&T user.
Right, and I'm a Verizon user.
Yeah, so we would know. But on Thursday, another program sort of came to light.
It's
called
PRISM.
The PRISM program, which basically involves, like, internet companies giving internet data about foreign users to the U.S. government.
Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, all of these have sort of... are supposedly in this program. Some of them are claiming that they aren't participating in the program or that they don't know anything about it, but...
That's more troubling than the people that are just admitting to it.
Yeah.
And these are two separate programs that are sort of both add up to some privacy questions. Privacy has been all the talk this week.
Yes.
We're all talking...
So there's going to be another privacy story that we're going to get to in
a little bit.
Exactly.
And it's the you know, the sort of line of reasoning of supporters of these programs has been like, well, you don't have any privacy anyway, so deal with it. And other right. people are like, well, there's still the force of law. Like, you're still supposed to, like, have a warrant to, like, investigate exactly. somebody. And a lot of these programs, you know, the phone tapping program was made possible under the Patriot Act.
Right.
And it basically is sort of like, it, you know, obviously it can't be the sole reason that someone is being, you know, brought under suspicion for terrorism charges or whatever, that U.S. citizens are protected from having that happen. But it's also warrantless data that's being accumulated about them, so that worries people. And the same, right. you know, as far as the internet goes, that program is supposed to only apply to foreign nationals, but, like, what if foreign nationals are emailing you?
Well, then that's what they have your say. Email. I mean, think about all of the things that you use to, you know, that's what you use to sort of, like, you know, communicate with people internationally is you
yeah,
use the internet, you use Skype, you use, you know, email, you use
I mean,
chat,
if we have a tech problem with our podcast server, we have to email someone in, like, China to get it fixed.
Uh-huh.
And that's an email then that the U.S. government is allowed to have.
May not shock you to learn that happens sometimes.
Yeah. that may not be the most surprising thing you learned today.
But, you know, this is an interesting one because it, in a similar way to the AP scandal,
right.
is sort of that was the one that I was sort of, like, most obsessed with and was telling Republicans that they should be obsessed with. But it's like
right.
you said, they didn't sort of want to deal with it because it's about terror. So, yes, they felt like,
they love going after terrorism.
And it's similar here, that they're yeah. really, you know, they don't know whether to be honked off that their privacy is being invaded because this is supposedly being used for, you know,
terrorism
catching. Terrorism catching, exactly. Yeah. And they also sort of, like, can't really say much about it because
they're the ones who put the program into effect.
They put the program into effect. It's been going for 7 years, which obviously started before Obama got there.
Well,
it came about because of the Patriot Act, which started after 9/11. And it's sort of one of those things where it's like they sort of don't really know how mad they're supposed to be about
this.
Yeah,
well, and this one is unique because it's an issue that I think is inherently troubling to Democrats. But all of our legislators are sort of invested in it. They're the ones who have been approving it every 3 months to keep going.
Exactly.
So there's no one really, like, not defending it on the political level. Like, Obama's defending it. You know, Dianne Feinstein was out there defending it. And Saxby Chambliss was out. I mean, like, everyone who's anyone is out there defending it at the moment, sort of regardless of their party affiliation.
Right.
So it's sort of hard to know how you're supposed to feel about it.
Well, and
because the people, there's not that much controversy about it out in the political spectrum.
Right.
It's only outside of the political, it's, you know, there's right. internet controversy about it, but there's not,
yeah.
there's commentator, it is pundit
well,
controversy.
We've sort of known about this too.
Right.
I mean, and it was a big story once before. I mean, lest we forget sort of like the you know, scandal during the Bush years about the warrantless wiretapping that was going
yeah.
on. Like, that was sort of a part of the same thing. And that was being done without a warrant. This is mostly being done within the law.
The law,
I mean,
yeah.
that was written in the Patriot Act. So it sort of seems less scandally to me. Now, that is sort of apart from whether I agree whether we should be
right.
doing this or not.
Right.
But just in terms of, like you said, like, whether this is a political scandal or not, it's another one of those, like, non-political scandals
yeah.
that people are apparently trying to make hay out of, because there's nothing...
Out of the, like, all of a sudden.
There's nothing to this that, you know, we as Americans didn't know has, you know, been going on since 2006. It was funny, you and I on Friday night were watching Real Time with Bill
right.
Maher, and he started his panel discussion talking about this, and he read a quote from USA Today, and it sounded like it would have been from, you know, this Thursday, and then he, like, directed it to the panel, and he was like, that was from USA Today in 2006.
Yeah.
So, it's not as if we haven't been down this road.
We've already known. Well, and what's interesting about it is that it's, because, like, my mother was furious about this, and I was like, I think it's, you know, it's okay to be furious with the Obama administration for not doing anything about this program if you want, because this was a Bush program. But it's not worth forgetting that it was a Bush program. Like, this is not an Obama scandal.
Right.
It's maybe an example of his lack of action.
Right. And
it's like him not closing Guantanamo. He didn't
right.
open Guantanamo.
Right.
He just didn't close it.
Well, and he has also campaigned. He campaigned
on
stopping these things on privacy matters.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other thing that makes Democrats
yeah.
really angry about this. I think for me, I care less about. There's two things that I do care about. I don't really care about the government collecting metadata, but
right.
it's just whether this turns into more.
If, yeah.
Like, if this is happening, can more things start to happen? Where is the line drawn as to, you know, when they can start listening? Because right now they're not listening. You know, it's things like that. And the other thing that sort of just, like, makes me angry about the whole thing is that instead of doing things like this to catch terrorism, I just feel like there are so many things that we could do to just make there be less terrorism.
As And
those would be less scandally. Like, you wouldn't have to have scandals all the time. You would just have less need to be tapping our phones
This is an ongoing... I mean, I think someone else pointed this out on Real Time. It's not like wiretapping is a new idea. I mean, we've been doing that. McCarthy was wiretapping all of Hollywood. And Miss Ian, it was just like, you know, it was really clumsy. It was like black boxes under their couches and things like that. But, like, this idea sort of, like, as a way of targeting political foes is not really a new thing. And it's not, like, a new scandal ever. And it troubles me that we're making a new scandal out of what is a problem, like, been a problem for the last 100 years, like, since technology was invented. I also think it has some interesting generational implications, because I've noticed that most of the people that are most vehemently against this are much older. And people who grew up with the internet almost have no expectation of privacy, because the internet feels like a non-private place.
Right.
Like, and this is just because I just sort of, like, grew up with the internet. I don't really expect that the data on the internet is private, that anything I do on the internet is private.
Right.
And I think that there's a line there. Like, I certainly have used the internet to organize political battles and things like that. And I don't think that that stuff should be open to the U.S. government to just, like, be spying on me for. However, I'm not using carrier pigeons to send those messages. I've never lived in a world where I've even really mailed letters.
I know.
You know? So, and Brent hates the mail, so so he's certainly not doing that. But I mean, like, those types of things, the sort of secure types of communication that used to be common are not really things that people our age even think to use or would expect to use. So, to some degree, I'm sort of not surprised by this as much as I would have been surprised if I found out that the government was tapping my home phone. And if the government was opening my mail, I'd be pretty pissed about it.
Yeah.
But as long as if the government is getting weird data about my email, I'm sort of not surprised. I'm using a private company's resource. Like, Gmail is not, you know, the US government. It's a private company. They're subject, you know, they have their own policies in regards to privacy, and I sort of, like, don't understand what they are.
Yeah.
So I understand that if I'm emailing Brent, like, silly links that make fun of Republicans, like, it's possible that someone at Gmail or someone else is seeing that email. They're certainly seeing something about it, because I get a lot of targeted ads from Gmail.
Yeah.
That's the first sort of, like, sign that your email's not private.
Yeah, well, and that's the... I think that there's also... I think to a certain degree, most... and this is maybe a sad commentary on our nation right now, but I think that most Americans are like you in the sense that I think that they probably at least have some sort of idea that every communication that they're having is not entirely private.
Yeah.
I think people sort of already know that.
It's not happy to think about.
It's not happy to think about. But, like, I think that if you did just some random man on the street interviews prior to this story that broke this week, and asked people whether they thought the government was doing this, I bet you would get probably at least well over half of the people would probably think that the government was doing this.
Well, for one thing, Americans are total conspiracy theory nuts. So everyone thinks that this is happening anyway.
Right.
And it's not, you know, it's not great to not have that kind of privacy anymore.
No.
It's certainly not the kind of... And I think, I certainly feel like there would be a line drawn if personal conversations were being somehow recorded.
Right,
like,
of course.
If me and Brent were having this conversation not with a microphone and disseminating on the internet, it would be troubling to me if the government found out about it.
Right,
But because it's going on to the internet, I'm not going to be surprised if they know, you know? And it's sort of like the double-edged sort of using a resource that is that universal and that enables community. You know, the internet enables political organization like never before. It's the next frontier of political organizing. The government used to go and tap phones at various nonprofits that had political agendas
or
political groups of any sort. And this sort of, like, makes that not necessary because they're just tapping everything. They can just tap all of your communication.
Right.
But I mean, this as a way of targeting political people is not a new idea. That's why it's not a new idea to me.
Yeah.
Because I used to work at a nonprofit where you would hear a click every time you picked up the phone, and all we talked about was whether we were being listened to. Now, this was staffed by people who were sort of McCarthy era, you know, people, and then me, so it was a slightly outdated view of what might have been going on. But I mean, that's the kind of thing that if you're part of, if you're in the political landscape, you don't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily surprise you. It irks you a little. It's not awesome. I was curious to know what people thought about the hilariously boring conversations I would have with my mom while no one was in the office. You know, as my mom was like trying to say hello to whoever was listening in on our phone call yesterday, I was like, do you think that they tune in every day to get an update about the weather in LA and upstate New York?
New York, yeah.
Like, is there like a 6 o'clock weather update that they're getting every day? Because there's not really anything else they could be learning from our phone call.
No.
But, yeah. You know, these are sort of like, this is the kind of issue that it's like, you have to have sort of like practical politics and ideological politics on that don't necessarily, you know, come together at any point.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I was at a political sort of like thing in college at one point that was where a group of anarchists were presenting, you know, we're doing a panel discussion about being anarchists. And somebody was like, what do you do about elections? Because obviously they're not anarchist candidates. And the entire idea of voting an election does not really jive with the anarchist point of view. And they were like, well, we're Democrats. Like you have to be engaged on whatever level you can. Like I'm allowed to work towards these ideological points of view by like spreading information about the ideology. But I also recognize that I'm a US citizen. It's my responsibility to vote in elections. I'm not above voting for a Democrat. I just want them to be more like me.
Right.
So you sort of, in this kind of situation, you have to sort of like figure out where the middle ground is, where like I would like the right to complete privacy, but where can I sort of like draw a line between what's acceptable and what's unacceptable? And I think that the concern here, like right now, I don't think we've ventured into the unacceptable. I think the concern is that there's no way to know when you ventured into the unacceptable.
And I think that
there's so many
gray areas within the Patriot Act too, because I studied the, and it's been too long now, but that was being written when I was in college and I was a journalism major and I had a First Amendment law class and we studied it a lot. I mean, we really sort of like went, I mean,
because that was a very controversial.
We went through the thing. And like I said, that's been a while since I was in college, sadly. But it's not what you'd call a great law.
No, it's not awesome.
No, it's not
super awesome at all.
It's not awesome. So maybe, you know, this to me is sort of similar almost to like the conversation that like got started when we were talking about the drone program. Just in the sense that like it's probably good that we are debating about whether we like this or not, basically.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I don't politically, however you feel about it. Like, I mean, just like, you know, where you stand on this it's a good conversation to have, I think, as Americans.
And I think it's something that we were going to have to address at some point because technology has sort of made our, you know, our old ideas about what constitutes private and public very
well, even from now to 2001.
Yeah.
I mean, just that amount of time we're in a totally different world digitally.
Yeah,
right
we
now.
Didn't have smartphones in 2001.
No.
My cell phone was real funny looking, and I played a lot of Snake on it. It was a Nokia, yeah.
Oh my god, Snake.
Snake.
They should revisit Snake.
It seems like they must have already. There was a game suspiciously like Bejeweled on my TI-85 calculator in high school.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I remember
Then Bejeweled... And me and Brent are currently both fighting an addiction to freaking Candy Crush.
It's amazing that we're even able to pull this podcast together this week.
The amount of time we spend playing this game...
I've declared that I've quit on multiple occasions. And Lila took a screenshot of my Facebook page the other day, and she was like, I thought you quit. First off, it's upsetting that that's going on. That's a privacy issue that I have trouble with. Right? That more than the government listening is that Facebook knows I'm playing Candy Crush. That's
again,
really
Facebook
what I'm
is paddling
about.
On you to your friends.
I don't want that.
No, it's
I don't
awful.
Like that one.
This is why I won't put my Spotify... I won't link my Spotify account to my Facebook page.
Is my Spotify
page.
Linked to my Facebook page?
Yeah, it has to be. You have to sign... I mean, it may be linked to, like, not say anything about what you're up to on Spotify.
Right.
But I have... Like, the old Spotify accounts, you didn't use a Facebook.
Because here's what I think about Spotify. I love Spotify, but I feel like Spotify, as it's free, is the place that you can listen to terrible things that you don't have to pay for. So... If people are knowing what I'm listening to on Spotify,
that's
they're getting a lot of Selena Gomez.
Right.
They're getting a lot of musical theater. They're getting some things that like I'm not comfortable with anyone knowing,
absolutely.
Let alone the government.
No, exactly.
Least of all the government.
Least of all the government. No, that's why I won't link my account. It's the same. But Facebook is just in the business of tattling on people now. It's tattling on you to your friends about every embarrassing in phone habit that you have.
Yeah.
So, in any case, don't download Candy Crush. You will regret it.
Don't do it. Also, do it.
Also do it. It's awesome. Anyway, The Guardian, after revealing all this information about what the NSA is up to, also revealed the identity of the whistleblower in this case, who is a guy named Edward Snowden.
Who wanted to be revealed.
Yeah, he gave them the permission to reveal his identity.
Hey, everybody wants their 15 minutes.
Exactly. Well, I mean, and he was a former CIA technical assistant. I think he's sort of like trying to be the next Bradley Manning, basically.
Yeah.
I think he'll become a hero to the left at some point.
Probably.
And we haven't really covered a lot of Bradley Manning, but I know, like, sometimes I listen to Citizen Radio, which is another podcast. It's another left-wing political podcast, but it's a little bit more sort of, like, focused on progressive politics than we are. We cover mainstream politics from a progressive point of view. They cover a lot of things that we don't even get into, including Bradley Manning. And so perhaps you don't know a lot about the Bradley Manning case, but I think that this is sort of, like, his attempt to be within that sort of, like, school of people. In any case, the NSA is super secretive, so it takes a whistleblower to get this information out. And the NSA is one of those organizations that is sort of creepy.
Like, it is.
You sort of want there to be a couple whistleblowers with the NSA.
It's like one of those things. It's just like, it sounds creepy. I don't know why.
It sounds authoritarian.
Why three letters sound so creepy. It does, though, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it's
just and I just like don't understand sort of like how the NSA, like the fact that there's an NSA that is not the CIA or the FBI makes me nervous, because they're already looking into this kind of thing.
Right.
At the CIA and the FBI, like, they investigate stuff. That's what they're up to.
Yes, they
over
do.
There. So it's weird that there's then a security administration that, like, does something else where they, what, are they taking out terrorists? Like, it's hard to know.
Yeah.
It's hard to know sort of what kinds of secrecy they're allowed.
Yeah.
There was other privacy news this week as well. And sort of
weird
privacy news that I don't even know how I feel about
this. So weird. There was a case in front of the Supreme Court, basically, where they were deciding whether police could take DNA swabs from anyone who is arrested. Not people who are convicted of anything.
Not guilty people, just like people.
Just went taken
in, basically,
the way that you would fingerprint someone. Right, exactly. And they can now do that.
They can just DNA swab up a storm.
By a 5-4 decision, and the dissenting decision was the three liberals and Scalia.
What a confusing moment for America. And this makes it impossible to know what we're supposed to think. We already didn't know.
Do you think those three liberals were like wait a minute, did we do that wrong? Do you think everybody like just sort of like, everybody, did Scalia not sleep that night?
I'm wondering if Scalia was not talking to anybody else and didn't know that he was doing this wrong.
But the dissenting opinion was apparently just
scathing. Yeah.
I mean,
well, this used to be the purview of the Republican Party, is privacy issues.
Yeah.
They love freedom and privacy.
Love it.
Did love freedom and privacy. I mean, they've never actually loved it. They've loved it for everyone but them. I mean, for anyone that's not them.
Right.
I mean, no. I said that backwards
everyone.
Both times.
No, they've loved it for themselves.
They don't care about other people's privacy. I said that backward at least three times in different ways. In ways that sounded like the opposite and yet were wrong.
You were trying to get there.
I was trying
to
get there.
Seeing what stuck.
Exactly. But in any case, this is another one of those privacy issues where I'm sort of like, well, DNA is like the next frontier of identifying people, so I don't know how I feel about it. You would sometimes have to go get fingerprinted at the police station for things that were not crimes. I had to get an extended visa to go to Europe or, like, you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, my fingerprints are on file with the NYPD, and I've never been arrested for a crime.
Right.
That may be surprising to some of you who've seen me at protests, but that's life. But, so in any case, I sort of, to some degree, you know, feel like, well, why can't we just keep fingerprinting people? Like, is that impossible to, is that, like, so much less accurate that we can't keep a fingerprint database? But I guess, you know, DNA is the new fingerprint, if you will.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, like, green is the new pink or whatever. I don't know if that's a thing. I've been seeing a lot of green in stores, and I thought to myself, this is sort of like when I used to see a lot of pink.
You looked at my shirt.
Yeah. Well, it's Pride Week. I've been seeing a lot of pink just around.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case,
probably a lot of pink tank tops.
A lot of pink tank tops. Mostly, more so than pink, what you're seeing is tank tops. In any color, in all colors.
Yeah.
Green and pink.
Yeah, it's the words. It's the gay summer wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, in any case, this is sort of like another privacy issue that kind of bolstered the last, you know, like after a week of already talking about privacy issues, this Supreme Court decision was just a blow to people who thought they knew things about what they thought. And
But if you're a fan of privacy, it's a bad week.
Bad week. Yeah, if you're downloading child porn on your computer,
not great.
While committing crimes that aren't downloading child porn, I guess that's also a crime. That's a DNA-less crime. Then it was a bad week for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bad times.
It was a good week though for Susan Rice.
Yeah.
Love this. This is a great story. After
her fall from grace, fake fall from grace over Benghazi.
Right. And I love the story for a couple of reasons, because I love that Obama did this. Basically, he hired her as his
National Security Advisor,
which is not something that she's going to have to go through confirmation for. So basically, Republicans have no recourse. So I love it that he did it, because it's very much sort of like a thumb to the eye to everyone who sort of tore her down. And I also love that he did it because it really just sort of, I mean, through all of the fallout with Benghazi, if we've learned anything, it's that Susan Rice was totally vindicated in this. I mean, she literally did nothing wrong. She had nothing to do with Benghazi. She was the ambassador to the UN, for God's sake. She went
out. She even got wrapped up in it.
She was on the Sunday shows the Sunday after it happened. The information that somebody put in front of her that somebody wrote with these stupid talking points that we've talked about. So, I'm glad that she sort of has not totally fallen from grace, because she should be the Secretary of State right now, probably. And this is actually, depending on how you look at it, sort of a higher position than the Secretary of State, because she's pretty much, I mean, making all of the national security decisions that John Kerry is sort of going to have to
follow
and go out to the world with, pretty much. So, I really love it. And they can't do anything about it.
They can't do anything.
They're just stuck
with
more
Susan Rice than they bargained for.
Yeah. Perfect.
Well, and I think the sort of, there's been, now that, you know, they can't come out against John Kerry the way that they were coming out against everyone else under the sun, because they're sort of in the old boys club with John Kerry. So, like, this is a much more sort of protected environment. Obama's already on their target. He knows it. So he's sort of like, fuck you.
Okay. Yeah,
and John, you know, the State Department is no longer sort of in the line of fire, because they really can't go after Kerry the way that they would that they would have gone after Susan Rice and went after Hillary Clinton, who was doing the most boring job of Secretary of State ever. So, like, why she's in the subject of controversy, nobody knows. I was actually talking about this as well with my mom, and I was sort of like, you know, I feel like Hillary Clinton, all told, was sort of like a fine Secretary of State. I don't feel like she's breaking down barriers or changing laws of lands or anything like that. She was like, she didn't fuck it up.
She logged a lot of miles.
I think she logged the most miles.
I think she did the most traveling. If that's something.
If that's a thing that people are counting. She's just sort of like, fine. I still maintain that that's not something to run a presidential campaign on.
No.
But, you know, she did the job. And now we have someone new to do the job. And he probably will, I think, ultimately
do a similar job.
Be remembered for doing a fine job as well. Yeah, it's overall, all these people are going to have been fine.
Right.
So all this controversy will have been meaningless.
Yeah.
The other big story of the week was that Marco Rubio is having a very bipolar moment when it comes to immigration reform.
Well, because, and the Republicans as a whole are
as
sort
a whole,
of
yeah.
having...
Well, they're eating their own left, right, and center. They all hate each other right now. Surprisingly, one of the most rabidly anti-immigration reform people out there is Ted Cruz, who is an immigrant himself.
I know.
So that's a mystery. Mystery is abounding everywhere, because Marco Rubio, on like Wednesday, was going on about how they didn't have enough votes to pass the immigration bill and all was lost and the whole Gang of Eight proposal is down the tubes. And then on Sunday, he decided that he felt fine and they had enough votes and everything's going forward as planned.
Right.
So nobody knows what's happening.
Right.
It's anyone's game at the moment.
This is the type of bill that, and we're going to get to the House in a second, but I mean, you and I have often talked about, even if this gets out of the Senate, it's dead as is in the House unless Boehner decides that he's going to bring it up for a vote and can get enough Republicans to vote with the entire Democratic caucus.
Right.
But it's sort of one of those things where, like, passing it with, like, just 60 votes is not even really going to, like, they're going to have to pass it with a large majority to sort of, like, put the pressure on the House to actually vote for the thing. So, like, if they're scraping by for votes, it's not good enough, unfortunately, which is sad.
I mean,
it's just...
Just getting this through the Senate would be a victory at this point for these people. They've been working on it for, like, months now.
I know.
And it's stupid bill that's not going to really fix anything.
Right. Well, and one of Lyle and I's favorite pastimes is to, you know, talk about all of the times that we knew things before everyone else did.
Right.
And, you know, it was common thinking that this was going to pass after the last election with just sort of flying colors. Yeah. That everybody, you know, like just 100-0 in the Senate. You know, like everybody wanted to,
all together.
The Democrats and all the Republicans realized that the, you know, Latinos were not voting for them. And it was just going to sort of like, and you and I were like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
if there's one thing
the GOP can't learn, it's how to attract Latino voters.
No, it's nothing. Because in our next story...
Yeah,
I mean...
Exactly.
We know for certain... Well, we'll get to that in a second.
We're going
to
get...
I mean, there are some Republicans, sort of like Kelly Ayotte came out today and said that she's going to support it. There are a decent amount of Republicans, but a lot of these Republicans are in the Gang of Eight already, so
well,
we shouldn't be surprised.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, I'm not surprised that Lindsey Graham...
No, because he's in it.
Ditto Marco Rubio, Jeff Flake.
Ditto Marco Rubio. So it's
well, and these are all people that have vested interests in their own states in attracting Latino voters.
Yeah.
Like, Jeff Flake represents Arizona. He's not going to be against immigration reform proposals because he needs to be elected in Arizona as a person.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that any of these people are sort of coming out of the woodwork. I remain shocked that Ted Cruz can be as vehemently against this as he is.
It's crazy.
He has a lot of nerve.
And he's from Texas, too.
He's from Texas.
Well, he's from Canada.
He's from Canada.
Texas, which
he
is also a border
Texas.
State.
Texas.
So.
He represents a border state. He is an immigrant himself, a relatively recent immigrant if naturalization processes are to be believed, because even though he came here as a young man, he did not become a citizen until 2005.
Right.
So... All of these people are sort of... I mean, Mike Lee, I'm sort of like, well, go screw yourself.
Yeah.
You're from Utah, so, like, whatever.
And the other... but the thing that is apparently the sticking point on this is
border security.
Which is sort of like... Everybody wants to put sort of like... First off, there's, like, zillions of dollars worth of money in this bill for border security.
Yeah.
So, like, what else do you want?
Right.
Second off, like, if you're... They're also trying to attach this sort of, like... You know, the border has to be secure in some sort of, like, vague way.
Right, like, how do you quantify that?
So how, like, and that's the...
When is it secure enough?
Right.
Nobody knows.
And then
knows.
They're also fighting with, like, I think, like, what the amount of years is before, like, if you were here illegally now, like, before you can actually, like, sort of, like, get citizenship. It's like, well, it's... I think the Senate bill has, like, it's, like, 11 years or something, and the
it's
House
like,
is like, well, we want it to be, like, 13 or
something.
But it's just sort of like... What? Those are the things that are, going to harpoon this thing?
Derail
immigration
reform?
That's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
Like, just decide on something and fucking vote for it, for God's sake.
If there's one thing we've learned about border security appropriations, it's that they're almost always a waste of money. Mm. Building giant walls is a waste of money. Hiring millions of people to man the border is a waste of money. Like, making it so that it's impossible for even U.S. citizens to get back into the country is a waste of time for everyone.
Right.
Like, all of these things are crazy.
Yeah.
And they're all focused on this one stupid border with this one country. Like, give up the ghost. Mexico is just letting people walk right in. They're not worried at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know. But, like, Canada, you do shit like this. Like, Canada, it's impossible to get into Canada these days.
Yeah.
Canadians are not wanting Americans to come over there, as it feels like, because it's getting through Canadian customs is kind of hard. It's like going to Britain. So this is the last thing we need, is to not be able to get to Canada for cheap drugs.
Yeah, I know.
Northern United States people should be worried about where this is all going. Right. We don't want a wall with Canada.
No.
We want to be able to sneak over that border.
Yeah, just like we want to be able to get cheap drugs in Los Algodones.
Exactly. A Mexican city surrounded on two sides by the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the ways that we know that there's no chance in hell that this is going to pass the House is because the House was up to some shenanigans this week.
Exactly.
Where they were passed a bill to deport DREAM Act citizens.
Obama declared that they were going to stop deportations of people that would qualify for, like, DREAM Act-like status.
Right, basically, you know,
kids who came as kids and didn't have anything to do with it
and have been raised
in the U.S.
Right.
And the GOP is, like, literally the worst. They're just, like, the worst people ever. Because they hate children, obviously.
Right.
More than I do, even.
They hate
really
children
hate children.
Racist.
Right. I hate children indiscriminately.
That's true.
They hate children. They hate Mexican children. Mm-hmm. But more importantly,
they hate
American children. Because these kids are American, first of all.
Exactly.
Right. But also, this is all, like, this is all just sort of, like, so poorly timed for them because they've already managed to, I mean, they were trying to do outreach to the Latino community after the election because some of them realized that they were losing elections because Latinos hate them.
Yep.
And Latinos are natural allies for them, so it's insane of them to feel this way. I mean, it's insane of the GOP to to be treating them this way. Yeah. It's not insane for Latinos to hate them. They're racist.
No, they're doing it right.
They're doing it right. But it's also sort of like, it's just sort of like a waste of, like, this was such a, when Obama came out and with his own sort of, like, self-styled Dream Act-like policy, it was so popular that to remind everyone that he did this is, like, who are they winning over now?
No one.
People in Iowa and Steve King's district? Like, who gives a shit what they think about immigration?
No.
And in fucking Iowa.
In Western Iowa? There's no Hispanics in Western Iowa anyway.
There's no one in Western Iowa.
That's the thing.
There's no people there.
That's the thing that you need to know about Steve King's district.
Right, is that people don't live there.
I'm from Iowa.
Right.
And that is, like, a large section of the
Brent
state.
Brent is from the part of Iowa that people live in.
Right. Only, it's, like, it's literally, like, half of the state geographically.
Right.
And that's because there's, like, one person per, sort of, like, every couple square miles, pretty
much.
I mean, so, there's no concern about
his constituents.
His constituents.
He doesn't have any.
He's just a racist prick.
Yeah, exactly. But this is just sort of like, you know, Boehner this week wrote this like op-ed where he was gonna, where he was trying to, you know, reach out.
Right. It was like in La Opinion.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was one of those sort of like vague attempts that they make to reach out to Latinos without any clear policy suggestions or anything that would suggest that they're worth supporting. but like, this is all. They're just like they just cannot help themselves.
They can't stop themselves. No.
They hate every non-white, non-male person in the world, and they can't do anything about it. They're helpless to their own bigotry. And it's almost sad because there's, like, this great opportunity that they could, I mean, they could have spent the next 4 years reinventing themselves as the party of the sort of, like, you know, social conservative.
Yeah, they're not going to do
that. The party, I mean, this is a policy that sort of reinvigorated them back when Reagan thought of the moral majority.
Right.
Like,
well, and this is sort of like just plays into what everybody already sort of like thinks about them negatively. We don't have the story actually to cover this week, but the college Republicans released sort of a report this week similar to how the actual National Republican Party did after the election. And they had sort of like done like a lot of polling and they did a lot of focus groups. And basically everybody said the perceptions of the Republican Party are that they're sort of like, they're racist, they sort of, like, don't think about the common people, they sort of, you know, I mean, just, and this doesn't help.
No, this like, is not.
Republicans, if you're listening, you're not helping yourself.
It's not one of their most genius.
No.
Well, and they.
Steve King is not one of their most genius members either, though.
No.
So, I mean, it should.
No, but I mean, the House vote was 224 to 201. Half of the House voted for it.
Right.
There's 224 people in the House who are also not some of their most genius members because
no, all of them.
All of them.
That half.
That half of the House
that
is full of
majority.
Non-geniuses.
Exactly.
So, in any case, don't expect a presidential win next time, guys, because you're certainly not. You know the demographics of the country are changing. You told us that. So
you told us you were going to do something.
Making your bed.
Yeah.
We'll say I told you so later because we love doing that.
It's one of our favorite things.
Meanwhile, the Frank Lautenberg, who was the Democratic senator from New Jersey, died because he was 89. He'd done 3 terms and then left office and then came back.
Right.
These old people, they will do that.
they will do that.
It's a really big loss to New Jersey because the guy that's been appointed in his place is the Attorney General of New Jersey and is a conservative Republican.
Yeah.
I feel like this is in bad taste. Chris Christie doesn't give a shit, so, you know, whatever. But I feel like you're not supposed to appoint somebody who's ideologically the polar opposite of the person that the voters elected.
No.
Was like the will of the people of New Jersey was that a liberal Democrat be representing them in that seat.
Right.
So like, don't put a fucking conservative Republican there.
Yeah, I know. It would have made sense for him to sort of appoint someone sort of apolitical, or even if it like obviously like
a breathing person.
The thing is that he sort of nominated somebody who's even to the right of himself.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
sort of like, that doesn't make any sense.
A self-proclaimed conservative Republican.
To a certain degree.
From his inner circle.
Like, I wouldn't even have necessarily have, yes, I realize it was a Democrat, so like, you're right, the will of the people, but like, it is Chris Christie. He's a Republican. I get that he's probably going to put in a Republican. He could have put in a sort of, you know, reasonable Republican. A Republican who sort of like comes from...
He could have put in a moderate Democrat, and that would have been a compromise. That's what you're supposed to do in that kind of circumstance. You're not supposed to use this as a way to totally screw over the people of New Jersey. You're supposed to be like, okay, I don't want to put the most liberal, most progressive Democrat on the, you know, in the world in that seat because I don't agree with them. But the people of New Jersey elected a Democrat for that seat. I'm going to find someone.
They've been re-electing Democrats.
They've been re-electing Democrats for that seat forever.
This is the first Republican seat they've had in 30 years. So obviously they're voting for Democrats. Like, that's what's going on in New Jersey.
So if that's what's happening, you find a Democrat who's sort of apolitical, who's kind of like a Clintonian Democrat, who believes a lot of the things about not spending money that you believe, but calls themselves a Democrat.
Right.
That's how you appease everybody.
Right. Or just someone who is just sort of like a, you know, someone who will sort of like... do the will of the New Jersey people or something. You know what I mean?
Somebody
like, just someone who's
generically,
sort of... Generically, either like... Or even just like a celebrity. Or not a celebrity, but just sort of like a political celebrity or something.
Yeah.
They're only going to be there for like 3 or 4 months.
Exactly.
So it's just sort of like... You don't have to send a crackpot.
No.
There. I mean, you just...
It's rude.
Right. It's rude. But he's
also
getting,
rude?
Well...
The date that he set for the special
election.
He's getting
flack from all sides on this, as he should be.
Yeah.
Because basically, he's getting... But he set an election for, I mean, it's what?
October,
it's October
16th.
Right? There's going to be an election in November, which is 2 months later. Or no, 1 month later.
Yeah.
And
it's,
so
he's up for re-election.
And he's up for re-election. So the problem here, the Republicans are mad at him because the special election is going to cost like $24 million.
And this is from Chris. And Chris Christie was like, I don't give a shit. And he's the guy who cuts everything. He's cut everything.
The only thing that Chris Christie's like personal platform
is cutting
everything. So for him to spend $24 million on an unnecessary special election and then say he doesn't care about how much it costs
is
ridiculous. So the Republicans are mad at him for that because he's spending this money on the special election. The Democrats are mad at him, understandably, because he set it for October, which is just an indiscriminate time.
Right.
That is other than they... But what he doesn't want is he knows that Cory Booker is going to run for this Senate seat. Chris Christie himself is up for re-election in November, and he's ahead of, like, his Democrat opponent by, like, 30-some points or whatever.
Right.
What he doesn't want Cory Booker on the ballot in November running for the Senate with him because he knows
Democrats
that...
Democrats will be excited.
The Democrats are, like, going to go batshit crazy and vote for Cory Booker, and probably a lot of non-Democrats and potentially even some Republicans are going to vote for Cory Booker because he's just sort of like this...
He's a superhero.
Superman.
Yeah.
He's a superhero. Right, exactly. He'll
shovel
you out
walk.
Of your snowstorm.
Yeah.
So... he's catching flack from all sides.
It's just a personal...
Deservedly so. It's the most self-serving decision that he could have made, and, like, everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Like, there's literally no other reason. He could not give...
There's no other reason.
There's no other reason.
He couldn't give another reason because they're not...
stopped myself at that point.
Because there wasn't one to give.
There isn't one.
It's the only
self-serving.
Reason.
Self-serving.
Yeah.
It's a self-serving decision.
Well, and he's really unapologetic about it because that's sort of his... He can get away with that because that's... But this is why you don't elect tough-talking, unapologetic people to be representing you.
Right.
Because...
But this is also...
They'll be rude to women and they'll do this shit.
I mean, he still may win election. But I think this is an opening for his opponent, which...
Totally.
She has not had. Because everybody sort of, like, just mysteriously loves him for whatever reason. And I think that she's finally got...
Able to find the...
Right.
To find a hypocrisy that she can...
She's down by 30
onto.
Points, so she's probably not going to win. But, I mean, like, I think...
This could splinter.
She can make some hay out of this, I think, probably, to a degree.
Yeah. I guess it was only a matter of time with him. He always does something totally insensitive. You know, he's been able, I think, to sort of keep up his popularity in a similar way to Bloomberg... Where he's just sort of, like, vaguely, you know, he's vaguely kind of, like, okay on certain social issues. He's sort of friendly with Obama.
Right.
He's got all of these things that kind of, like, if you were vaguely apolitical but sort of vaguely a Democrat, you wouldn't necessarily think not to vote for him for. Because you'd be like, well, he's helping us. Look, he's been with Obama.
Yeah.
You know, he's socially progressive. It's fine.
Yeah.
So you don't think about the, like, deep cuts that he made to your services, because those things always go unnoticed until it's too late.
Yeah, exactly.
So you won't notice that until your TV is stolen and they tell you that they just aren't going to be able to get it back and sorry. But you won't worry about that if you live in a rich town. And so you'll just move on with your life and elect a mean person.
I was just going to say before we go on.
Yes, do
it. We'll miss you, Frank Lautenberg.
We will, yes.
Because he was really sort of like, I mean, he's, you know.
He was a reasonable person.
He's been sick for a while, but he was actually not just reasonable. I mean, he was sort of progressive. At least in his time. And he really sort of, he fought the tobacco companies in terms of getting smoking outlawed on airplanes when it was still sort of popular and most of the Senate really was sort of like in the, you know,
that's
with
one
the
of
tobacco
those
companies at the time.
Things I mean, like, where you really, like, realize how far we've come when you think back to it. Because when we were kids, you could still smoke on airplanes internationally.
Well, that's what I was
going
to
say. And you couldn't do it here. And I think a lot, in part because the U.S. banned it, you stopped being able to do it internationally. Yeah. You can't smoke on planes internationally anymore.
I mean, like, I thought about when I didn't realize that he was the one that had done that until this week when he passed away and people sort of started talking. And I thought a lot about you, actually, because, like,
All banning smoking improves my quality of life.
I was going to say, because certainly in airplanes, because you're already stressed out in airplanes.
Exactly.
And, like, add to the fact that you wouldn't be able to breathe. I mean, that's a real shit show right there.
And I remember flying internationally back when you could smoke on airplanes. The thing that no one ever talked about, the smoking section was in the back, but the first class smoking section was in the back of the first class section. So if you sat in the front of the regular section, you were still sitting in the smoking section.
You were getting sandwiched with smoking.
Yeah, you were sandwiched with smoking. Yeah. You can't win in a situation like that.
No.
It's sort of like, it's an area in which I even really appreciate Bloomberg's contribution, because I think he did a lot for banning smoking in just the world at large.
Yeah.
But the airplane thing is how I think it's probably how it started in Europe. I think that Europe right now wouldn't have their strict anti-smoking laws that a lot of European countries have instituted
if we hadn't started
banning smoking on airplanes specifically, because that's one area in which the world connects.
Yeah, and we can thank Frank Lautenberg for that.
We can thank Frank Lautenberg for that.
Yeah.
Moving on to the New York City mayor's race.
I was going to say, I'm going to let you.
Something hilarious happened. Partially just hilarious because the New York Post was on the scene to make a hilarious headline.
That's what they're good for.
That's all they're good for. but the Post wrote a story about various fundraising bundlers working for Christine Quinn. And one of them is a Columbia professor who in 2010 was charged with felony incest for allegedly engaging in a 3-year consensual relationship with his adult daughter. So incest bundling became all the talk in New York. Bundling sounds terrible enough. Sounds dirty and kind of weird and gross.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Incest bundling sounds like it has levels of grossness to it that have not previously been, you know. But so in any case, the other sort of element of this story was that in 2010, the guy's attorney was questioned about the difference between incest and, or he questioned the difference between incest and homosexuality in his defense of this case. And so there was this quote going around where he says, "It's okay for homosexuals to do whatever they want in their own home. How is this so different?" So this was a common claim that people
argument. You know, people are often thinking that, you know, people are going to marry their dogs once gays are able to get married and things like that. And it's just sort of like, well,
just
no.
First of all, dogs can't marry because they don't have legal status. So that's not even a concern.
Right.
But also, it's, you know, these sorts of questions, I think maybe illustrate that the last 2 years have been sort of impressive, because this sounds absolutely bananas.
It does.
And,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
This
You're
is
right.
like a lawyer said this. Like, some lawyer said this in court, and it didn't make the news. Like,
no.
We would be reporting on this if someone said this now.
No, exactly. Yeah, you're right.
So, you know,
right.
Good news for happy pride, everybody.
Exactly.
But in any case, look to hear more about incest bundling in the future, because I hope the entire mayoral campaign hinges on incest bundling.
Yeah.
That's all I can ever
hope
for.
Well, if Christine Quinn has incest bundling and
Anthony Weiner has Twitter sex scandals, it makes the Anthony Weiner scandal seem a lot less dramatic.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. There was no incest committed there.
No.
That's one thing we know.
There was no sex committed
there. Was no sex committed. There was almost nothing committed.
No.
Just some cheesiness and stupidity was committed. Anyway, guess what's happening this week?
Bilderberg Convention.
Bilderberg. Yes.
We talked about this last year.
We did.
And it's back. It's happening. Or I think it's happening this week, right?
It's happening this week.
They were just sort of like getting...
They were getting ready.
Preparations.
It's happening on Thursday. It's starting on Thursday. Everyone's very excited.
Yes.
A list of people is very excited that includes a very bizarre collection, as usual.
Right.
But So, in any case, Bilderberg is this weird convention where everyone just sort of, like, all these, like, rich, important people get together and, like,
yeah.
secretly discuss things.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is organized as a, quote, charity for, quote, education. But, like, it's closed to the press.
Yep.
And, like, no one knows what they talk about. And there's all these political figures in there with all these CEOs having secret conversations about how to take over the world.
Yeah.
Well, that second part was editorial, but...
No, but I mean,
it's also
I think
fact.
That, you know, the Bilderberg Convention, I think, is sort of, like, just one of the things that sort of, like, plays into the whole sort of, like, you know...
Companies are secretly running
like,
the world.
The companies are secretly running the world, and this whole, like, New World Order thing. And
yeah.
I always, obviously, like, you know, think anybody who talks about that is crazy, because they're always right-wing, and they're always, like, lunatics. It would be something that my aunt was talking about,
right.
like, that Obama is sort of, like, you know, secretly, like, getting all of the, you know, world leaders to, you know, make one government and thing. You know
exactly.
what I mean? Like, and you know, you would normally think that that person is crazy, and I still ultimately do. But, I mean, you know, things like this sort of... play into people being able to think that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I will say, and maybe, I don't know what's different about this year, but last year there were some sitting U.S. politicians that were involved in this convention,
yeah.
and this year there are no sitting politicians involved from the U.S. It's all either retired
that
people
of.
That we know. Well, I looked at the list
they,
of attendees.
Oh, they did the
yeah.
official list.
Yeah,
right.
The official
last,
list.
Yeah, last year they were like, didn't like John Kerry go
yeah,
last year?
Yeah,
like
a bunch
that?
Of people went
right.
that I was like, really?
I know.
You know, it has the CEO of Google and the head of Goldman and like all of
yeah.
those kinds of people.
Yeah. David Petraeus is going.
Petraeus
think, right?
is going.
Yeah.
Tim Geithner yeah. is going. Henry
right.
Kissinger always goes.
Sure.
I don't know what he's up to, but...
His convention. It's sort of like...
Exactly.
It's like the So You Think You Can
it's
Dance
It's like the So You
convention.
Think You Can Dance convention. But
Lila and I are obsessed with So You Think You Can Dance, and we always call the Vegas week, like, the convention.
Because the same people go every
year. It's the same
year.
People, because I think there's sort of, like, a finite number of, like, really spectacular dancers
exactly.
in the world. And they always somehow... end up in Vegas
yeah, together.
And so Lila likes
and they,
to call that the
you know,
convention.
Some of them make it farther than last year. Some of them make it less farther.
Right.
But they
but
get to see
the
their friends.
Faces.
They get to see yeah. their friends. That's what's nice about it,
uh-huh.
you know?
Yeah, that's what this is.
It's really a networking opportunity for all
yeah,
dancers.
Yeah, it's like a reunion.
A reunion. yeah, so there's two former Treasury secretaries going, because Robert Rubin is also going.
Yeah.
And then a lot of, like, professors from Harvard and
sure,
Stanford
sure, sure.
and stuff like that. Meanwhile, there are some sitting politicians going from other countries.
Right.
And... for some reason, the Nordic countries are sending a lot of politicians there.
Oh, man,
I don't know
knows.
What they're up to.
Well,
I mean, they're up to getting
not,
healthcare, so I don't.
Right.
They're up to something.
Well,
right?
that's what they're not. They're not probably up to much. Which
right.
is why
they have time to
at
do
this. Right
yeah, because the
exactly.
finance minister in Finland is going. The prime minister of the Netherlands is going. Denmark's finance minister is going. Sweden's finance minister and their foreign affairs ministers mm-hmm. are going.
An Italian TV anchorwoman.
Randomly, yeah. Austria's Secretary of Finance, and then there are members of the British, Turkish, and French parliaments all going.
Yeah.
Former prime ministers from Italy and France.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real who's who of random people that are involved in government.
Right.
In Europe. And then a bunch of CEOs. Just like the CEO of everywhere and every bank.
Right.
And they all just get together and... they yeah. are setting up an informal press office this year.
Oh, that's right. I saw
yeah.
that. Yes, yes, yes.
I don't know what... by informal, what kind of access
that
press office will have.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know they're trying.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Romney is basically trying to have his own Bilderberg. Because he has a convention, or he had a convention this week, called the Experts and Enthusiasts.
This reminds me of... remember when we were going to start that website? What was it?
It was an institute.
People and Things Institute.
Yeah.
The Experts and Enthusiasts. It's the same thing. I was like, we should be able to go, because we
yeah.
are not just experts and enthusiasts, we are expert enthusiasts.
Exactly.
Like, what if you're both?
And enthusiastic experts. So
yeah.
we're really everything this convention
yeah.
is about.
But that's like the dumbest, like, the Experts and Enthusiasts convention. Is that... he thought of that himself.
Of course he did. And then that was the last idea he had, because he was just sort of, like, going around not answering questions
well, sure.
for the rest of the time.
Well, that's what he did
yeah.
the entire campaign.
Well, and
too,
it was like Rand Paul went, Chris Christie went,
mm-hmm.
Paul Ryan went,
yeah.
A bunch of CEOs and stuff, and they all basically sat around and talked about how they were going to take over the world,
mm-hmm.
as we assume. We don't
right,
know
don't
what
know.
They were enthusiastically espousing expertise on, but uh-huh. but it was obviously not something we approve of.
not with that crowd.
Not with that crowd. No, and Romney's staff even... this is my favorite part, is that Romney's staff said that the event had, quote, no actual agenda and will define itself over time.
Right.
Like, they didn't even know what it was. They were just organizing an event for everyone to hang out.
Yeah.
With no, like, you know.
No agenda.
No topic.
No.
So, in any case.
It's a lot like his presidential campaign.
Yeah, basically. And it was a lot like his presidential campaign because he just basically sat and had off-the-record talks with rich people.
Unorganized.
It was unorganized. He was asked about his ambitions for the conference and, you know, whether...
He didn't know.
He ran away. left his wife in front of the press and ran away. Mm-hmm. So, no news. No news, really. Just
did she serve any meatloaf?
Well, I believe there were
pies
some
or
horse events.
Skillet cookies or whatever the hell they were. What?
Welsh
what
skillet those? Cookies or something. No, I think that there was some dressaging that went on, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because there was golfing, as you might imagine.
Speaking of skillet cookies, should we tell people what we did
on Friday? God, we made cookies in a microwave in mugs.
We made mug cookies.
We made mug cookies.
It worked brilliantly.
Brilliantly.
With some of our better efforts.
Exactly.
I mean, we made a real dinner that involved, like, actual cooking.
Yeah, we made a delicious dinner, and then we mixed all of the ingredients you need for a cookie into a mug, and then put that mug into the microwave, and then had cookies in under a minute.
It was...
Under a minute. Can you believe it?
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. So, if you're looking for a way to get fat, we have
the recipe.
We have the recipe. Meanwhile...
Oh.
Michelle Bachmann is not as done as we had previously reported to you.
Or hoped.
Because Michelle Bachmann was on Sean Hannity Thursday night, unknown reasons, and...
Well, she's, you know...
It's her goodbye tour. Farewell tour.
It's her goodbye tour, and it's her sort of like... It's her goodbye tour, and it's hello Fox News tour.
Right, yeah. She's trying to snap a spot at Fox News, and they have not yet made an offer to her, leading me to believe they're not going to make an offer to her, leading me to believe that she is going to be disappointed.
Well, even for Fox News, she has, like, a lot of, like... fact
issue.
Problems.
Yes. I mean, they already are under scrutiny for being horrible.
Right, but they are called Fox News. And once you put Michelle Bachmann on...
It's not a news
program. You're in a risky position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They at least sort of, like, endeavor to report biased news. Right.
The thing that I love about this is that basically when she was on there, she said she was like, I don't know what I'll do, but I, you know, nothing is off the table. I might run for office again. The funny thing that about that is one of the reasons that she gave in that... ridiculous video that she released when she was retiring is that she had served for 8 years, and if that's enough for any sitting president, then that's enough for a member of the House of Representatives. So basically what she said a week and a half ago that the reason that she was quitting is because she sort of is basically like
done running for office.
She had set her own term limits for 8 years.
Which I approve of.
I approve of as well. And I've voted for term limits every moment.
Everyone votes for term limits.
Everyone does.
Everyone loves term limits.
Right.
It's one of the most beloved policies.
So now she's, you know,
going back on that.
That's already,
well,
you know,
we can't have expected that she was telling the truth in that video.
Well, obviously not, because she said
she doesn't
that the reason,
ever tell the truth.
She said that the reason that she was retiring had nothing to do with the FBI investigation, which
is the full truth.
Right, so. Exactly. So we know that there was a lot of truthiness going on. Untruthiness.
A lot of truthiness
going on.
Well, it was all truthiness. She felt it was true.
Exactly.
In her gut.
Right.
It was the kind of feeling that Michelle Bachmann's
gut. She has
gut,
a lot of gut feelings. A
lot of gut
that turned
feelings.
Into facts.
Exactly.
In her brain.
That are not always permanent facts. They're sort of temporary facts. Yeah. They come to her as she needs them.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in our politician saying absurd things of the day.
Final news, I think.
The National Review ran an excerpt of the Virginia Lieutenant Governor's 2008 book, 10 Commandments to an Extraordinary Life. Mm, sounds
yes.
inspirational.
Sounds like something that you would hate.
Oh my God.
Sounds like
there's
elements of The Secret going on in here.
Oh yeah. Big time. One thing that you may not know is that yoga, the beloved activity that many people in LA do for exercise and or to get their fake spirituality in check,
mm-hmm.
Leads to Satan. Opens your heart to Satan.
It does.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, it's one of the worst. It creates a vacuum in your soul, so Satan can just swoop in and possess you. And what's sad is that a lot of people don't realize they're being possessed by Satan, apparently.
Well.
It happens to people without them knowing, and they go on thinking that they've let God into their hearts.
And here I thought it turned into sort of like some sort of like exorcism type situation where you had Satan in you. No. You can have Satan in you and you don't know.
Yeah. Apparently that's an ongoing problem.
That's terrifying. What if
I am not that worried about it? Well, I might. I'm pretty sure that according to his criteria, I do.
You probably do. But you're not doing.
I don't go anywhere near yoga.
I did power yoga once, and I sort of, it makes me feel like maybe this guy's onto something here, because I...
Power yoga's terrible.
I felt filled with, you know, something, Satan at that point, because it was awful.
It's like, terrible.
It's the worst hour and 15 minutes I spent in my life. It's, no, it's the worst.
Here's the thing about yoga.
Right.
Really, like, hard yoga is terrible because it hurts.
Yes.
Really... soft yoga, for lack of a better term, is terrible because they are really quiet and they want you to meditate.
Right. The thing that I...
medium yoga is the only kind of yoga that's acceptable.
Yoga is that it's sort of... I hate it because, I mean, I don't mind working out, but, like, I feel like yoga is working out under the guise of not working out.
I know.
Like, in the sense that, like, you think that you should be...
It's real sneaky.
It's sneaky. Like, you think that you're going to yoga to do some sort of, like, relaxing and chanting and, like,
and instead you
breathing
die.
Or whatever. And instead, you end up working out for an hour and 20 minutes, and you don't want that.
No.
I mean,
no.
If you want that, then you just go work out.
Right. Just do something else that's actual exercise.
Go to yoga and get tricked into doing
it. I feel like it's relaxation, or it's stretching under the guise of relaxation. Because this is something, I take a lot of ballet classes, and people in ballet are always like, you know what really made me flexible was yoga. It's not ballet.
Yes.
You stretch, but really it's helpful if you're already flexible in ballet. You don't really get a lot more flexible.
Sure.
And everyone's always going on about how great yoga was for learning to keep their center and blah, blah, blah.
No.
And these are all things that I find suspect because I hate stretching. That's why I'm not very flexible. That's why I'm not very good at ballet. But I certainly don't want to go to a class that's touting their, you know, relaxation that's going on and then forcing me to do the one thing I hate the most in the world.
Right.
Also, I hate silent things.
You know what else I hate? I have a friend who does hot yoga.
That is the worst sounding thing. I've never done hot yoga.
Who would do that? Who wants to do that?
I don't have any desire to try it. I don't like heat at all to begin with.
Well, no.
It's terrible. Sitting in a really hot room where you might pass out and then also having to do yoga on top of that
sounds
like the worst thing that could happen to a person.
Yeah.
So in any case, it's...
I think we may have just in a roundabout way agreed.
Agreed.
With whoever this douche is.
Yeah. That's possible. I wouldn't argue that yoga opens your heart to Satan as much as it just makes you...
terrible in general.
Yeah. It's just a stupid idea that you shouldn't follow... It shouldn't go with. If it works for you, then great. It's
sure.
Healthier than eating potato chips.
That's true. But we do that.
We also have a biased view because we live in Los Angeles where people are doing yoga a lot.
Too much.
If you lived in Ohio, you might be like, yoga sounds like a great activity because it's better than watching television and that's all we do here. We just drive and watch television. We make cars.
Right.
We don't make cars. We endeavor to make cars,
uh-huh.
But we don't have jobs. But then we drive and watch television. Whereas in LA, people are assuming
to yoga.
That you do yoga.
Yeah.
People have all... There's a lot of assumptions going on here about who is and is not willing to do yoga. And the answer is that everyone thinks that you're willing to
do
yoga.
Willing to do it. Exactly.
Yeah. So, in any case... That's the news of the week.
Yeah.
Again, we thank the government for listening.
Yes.
We hope that you enjoyed this.
And wish you all happy Pride Week.
Exactly.
Or month. Excuse me. Happy Pride Month.
Right. Today is Pride Day.
In Los Angeles.
Like, the parade was today.
The parade was today.
So, the parking situation was today.
You know what I did for it?
You...
skipped town.
Did a rehearsal for a DAR performance that you're doing.
I'm singing for the DAR this week, everyone. Which is... something.
An organization that I qualify for membership in.
Oh, that's right. And do you know why I'm sitting at the DA? Well, because they're having like a big luncheon event for Flag Day.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Exactly. And do you know who is the... We're opening for someone. And let me tell you who we're opening for.
Who?
Betsy Ross.
No.
Yeah. Someone who does like a one-woman Betsy Ross show.
Boy.
Is coming and doing some sort of like thing where she sort of like talks about... You know,
here's a question.
Her process, basically.
Are you going to have to pledge allegiance to the flag at this event?
Well, we're singing like a medley of...
Are you singing flag songs?
Flag songs.
All about the flag.
We're doing flag songs. We're doing some... I mean, we're just doing things that like you would think that
it's
people from the DAR would like...
Flag,
that's
it's
in
a high
there.
Flag.
But we're also doing some cheesy... Like, we're doing some things from Oklahoma.
Oh, sure.
We're doing some...
Nothing says America.
We're doing
like,
some
a musical.
Some jazzing. We're doing some... Java Jive, some Manhattan Transfer type stuff. I mean, it's a real... I mean, the set list is really something. Yeah.
Well, But anyway. I hope it's fun. I hope it was worth giving up.
Yeah, but that's what I did instead
of the house music of the house music day.
It was.
In West Hollywood.
I would still, it's a toss up between it's, house music and patriotic music.
And both equally it's a grand terrible. Old flag.
Yeah, exactly.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.